Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother, Ryan Manise. Welcome to this Class 4 Better Hope Podcast segment. So, I haven't really wanted to say much about the presidential campaign because I don't want my emotions to override my logic. I'm not at all happy that Biden is the nominee, even though I am going to vote for him and I want him to win because Trump is a threat to the country. I'm not at all delusional in my belief that the Democratic Party is going to be anything but what the Republican Party was under George Bush. And it is that point, in fact, that I want to talk about today. Because it is clear that something has happened to the Democratic Party. They're using a strategy to win. And I put that in quotation marks, especially when it comes to the primary. But they're using a strategy to win. That suggests something very, very ominous for progressives. And most progressives are not aware of this. And they're not aware of it because most progressives don't know history. You know, it's wonderful that I started out not caring too much about the politics of all this. I started off caring about the economics and the history of it all, because that wanting to know, even if it wasn't thorough enough, because I was a working man and didn't have all that time, didn't have the money, and truthfully, my stomach was too empty half the time to really engage in it. But still, what I picked up when I was able to read, when I was able to research, informed so much more of what I know and what I speak about today than most of you can imagine. The Democratic Party, in the last two elections, this one in 2016, has pursued a strategy wherein they openly admit that for every progressive they lose, for every unioner they lose, for every black person they lose. Well, okay, they're not really, I guess, saying black person because they think they got black people all tied up. But even I think that's calculated in a little bit now. They have driven hard to capture disaffected Republicans. This is conservative Republicans, neoconservative Republicans. I want to be very clear about that because there's neoconservatives who are really Ronald Reagan Republicans, Goldwater Republicans, and everybody in between. They want those Republicans, and they want voters, suburban voters, who consider themselves independents. Now, having talked to a few hundred independent voters in my life, most independent voters skew conservative, and I'm talking neoconservative. They skew conservative. At least they talk the language of the neoconservatives. What I think is, in an earlier time period, most of these independents who skew conservative would actually be what we call traditional conservatives. This is a conservative that was before Barry Goldwater, and the type of conservative that has been constantly and consistently very rare in the United States. These folks were for a less intrusive government. They weren't for small government. They believed government had to be effective, and you didn't need any more government than was necessary. But they weren't for small government, to just name a point that they believed in. They were for less intrusive government. So these are the type of conservatives who, in 1992, when Newt Gingrich was taking the Republican Party and shoving it hard to the right, they were the type of conservatives who said, look, I believe that Roe v. Wade doesn't merit my influence because I'm in government, and government is not supposed to intrude on what you do with your body. These are the type of conservatives who would have said making marijuana legal isn't bad because, you know, we can have a discussion about whether or not it's going to lead to anything. But if a person chooses to smoke marijuana, they smoke marijuana because they want to do it. Now, we may encourage them to get help through other means, local means, regional means, even state means. But they were for a less intrusive government. Now, they had some of the same hang-ups as neoconservatives, which is they were sometimes on the wrong side of history because of civil rights needed federal intrusion, the New Deal needed federal intrusion, but they were consistent and they were persistent. So the Democratic Party has been attracting these people openly. They said it. And they have been wanting to replace their shrinking union base. They have been wanting to replace their impoverished base. They've been wanting basically to replace all of this New Deal coalition that brought them immense success. Now the question is why? Why are they wanting to do this? And I don't hear progressives talking about this. I don't hear anybody on the so-called white left talking about it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if it's not clear to you, let me explain to you why they wanted to do this. The Democratic Party is clearly moving back to where it originally was on the political scale. If you go to the Democratic Party prior to the 1920s, and even earlier into the late 1800s, the Democratic Party was not mostly the friend of the labor, of the laborer, of the labor unionist, of anybody looking for justice, really. It was the party of hardcore segregationists, of hardcore corporatists, of hardcore fascists before fascism was really a thing or a word. I've said to you before, if we compared how the United States lived in the late 1800s to what fascistic Germany and Italy was, you would find far more semblance between their systems in the 1930s and 40s, maybe absence the hyper-militarism, but you could actually count that too, because the United States was very militaristic when it came to Native American population. And in the late 1800s, they did get the Philippines and Cuba, and, well, not technically Cuba, but Puerto Rico and the like. The U.S. was a fascistic government back then. It was wholly owned by corporations. We don't like to think about that, but it's the truth. The Democratic Party was a huge, or played a huge part in that. The Republican Party, which had started off fighting that, I remember years ago, I had to be in my early 20s, when I read a very interesting article about a theory as to why Lincoln was assassinated, which wasn't just about the fact that he had freed the slaves, but more thoroughly, it was because Lincoln, in his second term, was going to take on the war profiteers in the North. There wasn't many, but there were some. And Lincoln himself apparently had expressed, don't know how true this is, but again, this is something that I read years back, had expressed that he was getting kind of concerned with the power of the banks and the industrial magnates that was starting to kind of coalesce their power in the North. And there was some talk by him to some of his close advisors, apparently, of, you know, trying to rein in that power over the government. So, just something to put out there. Maybe there's a little more reason why, you know, the man was assassinated. But again, you know, sometimes history is just what history is, right? But the Republican Party had been fighting against that. Or should I say, the one aspect of the Republican Party had been fighting against that. Not all of it was. Well, by the late 1800s, that was over. That was over. They literally, in some instances, were bludgeoned into submission. The Democratic Party from that point onward did start on a trajectory, a weird one at that, towards becoming more of a reformist party. Yet, that took nearly 30 years and a huge, and actually 40 years if we start at the beginning of 1890, the Republicans, that was really the first decade when the Republicans abandoned their fight against not only Jim Crow South, but a lot of the corporate entities that were rising in stature at the time. It took 40 years for them to get to a point of real change where they became the Reformist Party. Now, that included two major depressions. There was one in the 1890s, and then by the time Roosevelt came into office in 1932, obviously we were in a second one. But Roosevelt had to fight to change the direction and the composition of the Democratic Party the whole way. There's an interesting, though short, book on it called Roosevelt's Purge. Might want to check that out. That was written some time ago. But he had to fight all the way, but ultimately succeeded in changing, in some ways, the composite of the Democratic Party. And then that change was carried on slightly by Truman, even though Truman was more of a corporatist. But it's kind of funny because the problem of the modern Democratic Party was born directly after Roosevelt. Truman did some stuff that was seen as very great for the average working person, but he also was the one who gave us such gems as right-to-work laws, which undercut and undermined dramatically every other labor positive that he and Roosevelt had done. So then it seemed like people became resolved to teach the Democratic Party a lesson every time when they went too far corporatist, so they would vote against them, only to have to, you know, only to want to give them another chance later. And then if they went too corporatist again, they'd, you know, vote them out and then vote them back. But I digress. The Democratic Party had, at one time, my point was, been against Reformation, had been against reformist policies. And they were so bad at it that, you know, there had been upstart parties to challenge their grasp on power. But the Democratic machine, which this is not a new name, ladies and gentlemen. There were books written in the 1800s, and you could get these books on the internet now for free. There were books written in the 1800s on the party politic, or excuse me, the machine politic of the day. And that hasn't changed. There's still, you know, massive machine politicking of today. It's basically the Roman system, but it's what it is. The fight which took place in the 60s, really, to try to push the party inevitably left, which ultimately left a couple of people dead, including the Kennedys, you know. That fight wasn't trivial. That fight was really over the direction of the economic reality of the society. And the Democratic Party, who reeled from that, never recovered. They, or should I say the segment of the Democratic Party where Roosevelt was located and possibly Kennedy was located and such, they reeled from that. They never recovered. Ever. There's a question of if the Kennedys have now went over to the other side, considering that they ran against Markey in Massachusetts as a corporatist Democrat. So maybe they learned and they were like, yeah, we're not doing the revolutionary stuff anymore. We've become conservative enough for you guys now. Then again, every so often, there's a displacement of the hierarchy within a party, and a new generation of moneyed people emerges, so then the old generation has to align with the new. And they, you know, go into whatever factions are on the ascendant. Again, it's the old Roman system. The Democratic Party, though, used to be anti-union, used to be anti-civil rights, used to even be kind of anti-women rights. But they were very much pro-corporation. Lyndon Johnson's Great Society idea wasn't just a phrase created, guys. This was policy perspectives. This was a complete reshaping of America. And I know we use that phraseology like it's nothing, like it's just spit off the tongue. But you have to understand, at that level, when you're talking about reshaping America politically, you're not just talking politically, you're talking about economically, ladies and gentlemen. You're talking about changing the economic order. You're talking about changing the power dynamics. This is what made Dr. King so dangerous in the last 2.5, 3 years of his life. He started talking about the power dynamics of the country. These folks were so, the wealthy in this country at the time were so afraid of that change of that power dynamics, they were willing to kill to protect it. And that is what started the search, basically, at the upper echelons of the Democratic Party. That's what started the search for a new generation of leaders in the Democratic Party who could push the party away from the Roosevelt Dream and the Roosevelt Coalition. Well, it appears that the party is moving backwards now. That the Democrats that left to vote for Reagan, they're trying not only to capture them back, which this was on display, by the way, in the DNC, the Democratic National Convention this week, this year. I'm actually recording this in September. They are trying to, and this was evident back in the 1990s, they were trying to recapture law and order. The law and order concept. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you something. And this is going to seem very weird to any of you who are of a certain age. But I really need to ask you a question. What year is this? What year is this? Of course, you're going to say, well, of course, it's 2020. It's been the worst year in recent record. Yes, it is 2020. Well, ladies and gentlemen, these people are going after suburban Republicans. It was the suburbs, many, that switched from Democrat to Republican, if I remember the information that I read in, I got a couple of books on the election of 1980. But it was a lot of the suburbs. And that was in the early 1980s. So why are they hell-bent on trying to get together a coalition that hasn't voted the same in any election since 1980? Especially it's 2020. It is because at the top of the Democratic Party, outside of the moneyed people who really don't care, you know, as long as you do the bidding of them, they really don't care about strategy or what have you. Just do the bidding that we want you to do. At the top of the party, and I don't mean this as, you know, as horrible as it's going to sound, but you got a lot of old people. You got a lot of old people. I understand you want to still be in the game. You want to still be out there doing your thing. But here's the problem. And I was told this in my 20s by somebody who was older. They were in their 60s. They said, look, as an old person, I get stuck in my ways. I've been stuck in my ways now for about 20 years. You ain't changing that. And that's kind of what's happened to the Democratic Party. These people are still thinking that they're fighting the fight that occurred in 1980 and 1984. They still think that they're fighting the fight of 1992 and 1996. We haven't even gotten to a generation that thinks that they're fighting the fight of 2000 and 2004. That's how sad this is. But on a broader picture, they are moving the party back to where it used to be. Most of you don't really think about it, but if you've ever watched any civil rights documentary with footage from the late 40s, 50s, throughout the 50s, even into the early, well, most of the 60s, and it was done down south, it was recorded down south, you don't realize that the people who you're looking at most of the time, you don't realize, they don't point this out, but sometimes they do. You don't realize that those public officials who are saying those racist things are Democrats. You don't realize that in the North and in the cities, which Donald Trump rails against, but even amongst most of your urban poor who are white, most of your machines, your urban machines, were Democratic. And back then, unlike what he keeps saying now, the cities ran well. They were well populated. They had a lot of jobs, poor paying jobs, but still jobs. What changed was the suburbs were built and white people left and black people came in, and the white folks who owned the city didn't keep it up. The Democrats are moving back to where they used to be. So what is that leaving for the Republicans? Well, the Republicans in the 1890s became kind of lapdogs. Like, yeah, okay, we're just going to get along to go along. I mean, there were still some people trying to fight the good fight, but most of them were just like, yeah, okay, we're going to get along to go along, whatever. We're tired of getting beat over the head. Well, now the Republican Party, it has been deemed necessary by the wealthy. The Republican Party is going to become the new fascist party. And look, any of you who think that the Republican Party becoming this type of party is by accident, you're crazy. You're not paying attention to history, especially recent history. Across the country, do you think it is by accident that you have sometimes upwards to a dozen corporate-friendly, conservative radio stations, and not one, sometimes you have older radio stations that can't be dislodged, so they've been there. But usually you don't even have one challenging voice on air. I've watched that happen in the region that I've lived, where you used to have a couple of voices who would kind of challenge the corporate narrative. All of them have been shut up. This corporate-friendly propaganda, menticiding propaganda, by the way, and if you don't know that word, it's called menticide. M-E-N-T-A-C-I-D-E. M-E-N-T-A-C-I-D-E. Menticiding propaganda. Look it up. I ain't going to tell you what it means. Look it up. Menticide. M-E-N-T-A-C-I-D-E. This menticiding propaganda, after some time, encourages the person to be absolutely loyal to the corporation. To believe that what is good for the corporation is good for everybody else, even as you're looking around and seeing a different reality. That creates a massive conflict in your psyche, by the way. Which I wonder sometimes if that's where the anger is coming from these people. Because you really do have to psychologically fool yourself to believe that all of these things being done for these corporations are good. At the same time, that your whole world is crumbling. I remember Chris Hedges talking about that for his book, American Fascists. These people have been pushing for an executive president for a long time. We need a president that's going to run the country like a CEO. We need a president who's going to run the country like a CEO. We need a president who's going to run the country like a CEO. They've been saying this since the 1990s. Well, the problem with that is, one, the country is not, and the federal government is not a company. Two, when they started pushing for that, this was after the role of the CEO really changed and the type of person who you wanted as a CEO changed. Kind of reverted back to where it was in the 1800s. You had these predator personalities who became CEOs. You had these corporate raiders who didn't give a darn about anything but the stock price. And if that meant chopping up and absolutely hollowing out a major company to make the company look good for a couple of years before it crashed to the ground, that's exactly what they do. By the way, for those of you who think that I'm really like being hyperbolic when I talk about corporations and those who run them at the highest levels often acting like cancer, really, listen to that section that I just talked about again, and you tell me if that don't sound like cancer. They were literally asking for these authoritarian personality, these people with this massive narcissistic authoritarian mindsets, to be put in charge of the federal government. That's what they were calling for. These people, I remember back once when Fox News first started in technically the mid-1990s, but it was closer to the late 1990s. And I remember trying to watch them and listening to them make the argument that we need a commander-in-chief who's an executive who's going to treat the country like a business. You know, you can't spend more for a business, supposedly, than you have. I mean, it was ridiculous to me. But they were pushing it. They pushed it even throughout, and this wasn't just Fox News. This was various right-wing radio stations that I'd frequent periodically. They pushed this idea of an executive, a hardcore business executive, being not only president but governor, in order to, you know, treat the country like a company. And so that's the first thing that I thought about when Donald Trump was elected, was, wow, these people really pushed this. And now they got it. Donald Trump is a perfect example, by the way, of the executive culture that sprung up in the 1980s. He's a perfect example of it. The delusional nature of that culture. The public-private face of that culture. The incoherence of that culture. Everyone criticizes Donald Trump on him looking at the stock market and valuing only the stock market, the outward value of things, not the overall economy. Ladies and gentlemen, seriously, there is very few executives today that don't just do that. for God's sakes, I'm going to get back to the Republican Party in a moment, but for God's sakes, guys, when you watch a program like the Shark Tank, okay, like, I can't even watch that show to see that much narcissism in one room. When you watch that show, you are literally watching a predatory event. You're watching a predatory event which overemphasizes the power and ability of one group over the other. These folks are coming up with inventions and literally going to give their hard work, their hard innovation, to a bunch of people who not only don't need the money, but will profit handily, while the other person will get somewhat of, you know, they'll get a nice amount, but it's going to be nothing compared to the, quote, angel investors. Seriously, you guys, you know, the best $100 you'll ever spend is go on to one of these college websites, like a four-year college website program, and look up one of their, like, business administration programs. Look up what book they're using, and just spend $100 in getting one of those, and read it. You really want to know how the economy works? Read those books. It'll blow your mind. It's heavily skewed towards the wealthy. Even, you're taught this throughout college. It's heavily skewed towards the wealthy. It'll blow your mind. Anyway, this notion of a corporatized country, a corporatized governing system, which is beneficial to the stakeholders, which, by the way, they try to, the idea of a stakeholder is that it's everyone who has a stake in the company. So it's not just the stockholders, because back in the 1980s, it was just the stockholders. In the 1990s, the early part, it was just the stockholders. But then they realized people were getting PO'd about that because they were just cutting a lot of jobs to make those stockholders very wealthy. And so suddenly they changed their language, and it was, well, no. We want to care about the stakeholders, you know, the employees. We want them to feel... Note the language. We want them to feel like they're being heard. Not that they are being heard. We want them to feel like they're being heard. We don't actually want them heard. We just want them to feel like it. We want them to feel like they're being valued. Not that they're being valued. Not that they know they're being valued. Not that they're being listened to. We want them to feel that they're being valued. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just rebranding, and it's a trick. Literally, stakeholder, stockholder. You take out the A, you add an O and a C, and it's stockholder again. Okay? That's all it is. They're lying. And they're horrible at it. So, no. They want you to feel it, though they're lying to you. By the way, if you do your research on psychopaths... Psychopaths often manipulate your feelings to get you to believe something that is absolutely untrue. In fact, this idea of gaslighting that they keep throwing on Donald Trump, this is why I keep telling you he's a perfect representation of this corporate America. Literally, that's what gaslighting is. It's not just about playing with your reality, ladies and gentlemen. It's making you feel something is real when it's not. It's making you feel it, but it isn't. Feel it, but it isn't. They want you to feel a lot, but they don't want you thinking. And that's actually, when you look at corporate conservative radio. And I'm kind of surprised. I've been looking for a book on this. I'm surprised no psychologist or, you know, you'd probably have to do some interdisciplinary thing to do this, but I'm kind of surprised no psychologists or person who is a psychoanalyst or a group of psychologists or what have you have really studied the mental emotional impact of listening to right-wing radio and media. Because outside of just external influences, mentally, these people are being manipulated. It's undeniable to me that the people who developed Fox News and a lot of these radio shows in the early days, that these people weren't using psychoanalytic knowledge. It's undeniable to me. Because when you watch Fox News, when you watch or listen to these conservative radio stations, if you are spiritually grounded, and a lot of progressives aren't spiritually grounded, that's why I don't believe they notice this. But when you're spiritually grounded, what you sense is an attack of your senses. What you sense is really an attack of your senses. And it's almost like, and I'm going to use a little bit of metaphysics here because that's the only way you can describe this. It's almost as if your chakras, the energy centers, particularly your lower level chakras, are being assaulted into activity. They're being forced into overstimulation and activity. Now, I know that mentally, there are glands in the center of your brain that can actually become overstimulated and cause some adverse thinking effects. And it's almost as if this stuff is produced to do that. Just a thought, though. But I'd really think that somebody should do that research, because this stuff is organized to create severed, compartmentalized structures in the mind. It's structured to elicit a certain response by the brain, and almost to shut off the higher levels of your mind. But maybe, you know, I'm crazy, maybe it's not true, but, you know, somebody really should do a book on that. Anyway, I know it just went a whole long way around to get here, right? But the Republican Party, really, they have been designated as this fascist, pro-corporatist, hyper-nationalist group. And it hasn't been by accident. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, Chris Hedges did the book, he wrote the book, Death of the Liberal Class. Well, it's kind of funny because the pillars which he talked about in his book, an oddly inverted type of that pillar started taking shape back in the post-World War II era. And many of those inverted pillars became prevalent in American society in the 1970s and the early to mid-1980s. So that particularly, you had things like the church, the right-wing church, building a power structure and power base to take over the country. You had academia. It took that well into the 90s to actually get this done. But you had academia captured by corporate forces to build a new managerial and pseudo-progressive, pseudo-radical group of people. Even today, like most of the progressives that I listen to, you know, they don't have a clear vision for the country. But they do know something's wrong. But they just don't have a clear vision for the country. That's because their creative centers have been blocked. Corporations hate creativity. I'm not joking. They hate creativity. But these inverted pillars became the basis on which the Republican Party power structure was to be built from. And all of that is coming into full alignment presently. Like, a lot of people on progressives are, like, laughing. Oh, my God, look at this crazy person who's running, and they're Republican, and ha, 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 they're nuts, and, you know, that's just going to be another loss. Really? Because, you know, the Midwest, which turned Republican in the 1960s, and then went, well, the late 1960s, and then, if I remember correctly, moved a little bit in the 70s back and forth, and then went solidly Republican, has been assaulted by corporate-friendly radio and television broadcast. They've been assaulted by it. That is how people nutty people keep getting elected. Now, the internet is breaking that up. The internet is starting to break that up a little bit. But even the internet is starting to become captured by these forces. Thus, trying to maintain the fascistic nature of the Republican Party. Ultimately, I do believe the Republican Party is probably going away. And I do believe, ultimately, the Democratic Party, unless they change, in a couple of decades will probably be obsolete. Unless they change the game and, like, say, well, we're not doing these parties anymore. We want other parties. Which is absolutely possible. Because by the end of this decade, I kind of get the feeling that there's going to be a real struggle in this country for, you know, political power. So, you know, I'm going to have to really, before the end of the year, talk with you about the Democrats and Republicans. And there's actually a reason for the two of them. You know, there's the fight over Democrat-Republican is kind of like the fight over Federalist and Anti-Federalist. There is strict visions for both of them. You know, there you can't have both of them together. You cannot have a republic and a democracy. You can't have it. This is why the Romans wore a republic, but the population could still vote. The population could still vote, but the Romans wore a republic, and they were, there was no question about that. The Greeks were a full democracy, but then they got taken over by the Romans. So, but yeah, so I'm going to have to talk about that. But question, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. I love hearing from you guys. I know this was a bit of a long one. I thought it was just going to be a segment, but it's not. Question, comments, concerns, reach out to me. I'll talk to you on the next one. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a